from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today it's film and theater on The Art of the Matter. I'll get a preview of the upcoming Jewish Film Festival first.
And then I'll find out about three short chaotic comedies being performed at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site.
And finally, I'll see what I can hear about the musical Tommy at Footlight. And we'll have that arts calendar we call...
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indy's second annual Jewish Film Festival offers everything from romantic comedies to coming-of-age stories to documentaries to a chance to renew your vows, as Sharon Gamble recently learned in a conversation with Bob Epstein.
So how take me back before even last year's festival to who first said in a room full of interested people, we really should have a Jewish film festival.
My sister, who's a film buff and for 50 years was a member of the Hollywood Film Society in L.A.
Oh, my gosh.
And she pointed out to me that there were 60 Jewish film festivals around the country. And I did some research and found out that Indianapolis did not have one. And it was certainly one of the largest cities in the country that didn't have one. So why not? Let's give it a shot.
Absolutely. And we have a rich and long Jewish tradition in Indianapolis as well.
That is true. In fact, my wife's family settled here in 1853.
That's early.
That is early.
Where did they come from before?
That part of the family came from Germany. It's the Goldsmith family, mm-hmm. from which we ended up with a mayor.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Tell me about the process of selecting the films for the festival. You created a committee. You have some committee members who've been with you since the first year and maybe some new folks.
Yes, that is true. The first year, we probably gathered together 200 films, and I initially looked at most of them, and then we had a viewing session where we had four or five TVs set up, and we had maybe 20 people in my house circulating, and would you like this, you like that, and from that we selected the films that we showed last year. This year we did a little differently. We passed out DVDs of many of the films. The one for the gala is an example, and I can get into the gala in a little bit, is
yeah.
called The Jewish Marriage. So we had four films that in one way or another involved Jewish marriage or dating. And we selected four women. Two of them were not Jewish and two of them were. And from that, they selected the one film that we're going to show during the gala, which is Crossing Delancey. It's a wonderful older film.
It is, but it holds up. I see it occasionally rerunning on TV, and it's just as charming and as
right.
Engaging.
And the gala, which is actually on a Sunday night, we're going to have what's known as a klezmer band with clarinets and whatever. It's a typical Jewish band. We'll then have what I would call wedding food that would be typically served at a Jewish wedding. And then after that, before the film starts, we're going to have a Jewish remarriage of many people on stage with the nuptial canopy erected and a rabbi and a cantor performing it. And we actually have, I think, a couple people that are not Jewish that are going to participate, because it's kind of a ecumenical service. It's not a highly religious service at all. So they'll give some of these people a chance to break a glass.
and renew their vows.
And to renew their vows, if they wish.
And you know, you've just mentioned something I think it's important to point out. While it's a Jewish film festival, the films have Jewish themes, it's an ecumenical festival for anybody who cares about good film.
Well, following up on that, there are at least two films that are very ecumenical. One is The Jewish Cardinal, which is the story of a Jewish chap in Poland during the Holocaust that got out of Poland, went to France, was adopted by a Roman Catholic family, and rose in the church to become the head of the French Catholic Church, but never gave up his Jewish roots. After that film, we're going to have a discussion of Catholic-Jewish relations stemming from Pope John's Notre Aetate in 1964, the state of affairs regarding Muslims and Jews. So we're going to have Father Rick Ginther, who is the ecumenical priest from this archdiocese, as well as a couple of rabbis, discuss that. The second one is called Arranged, which is the story, of an Orthodox Jewish woman and a Muslim gal that meet in class, so to speak, and both of them are feeling pressures from family members about getting married. And so it's the interaction between these two. That film was done by the same group that did David, which we showed last year with great success. So those are two that are definitely reach across religious lines.
And those two young ladies are both teachers, so they kind of have a common bond there.
Well, there's actually one more, the Lemon Tree, which is a bit of a controversial film, but that takes place on the West Bank, where there is a Palestinian family that owned a lemon grove for many years, and lo and behold, it's a true story, I believe, that the Israeli defense minister is building a mansion right adjacent to the lemon orchard. And the Secret Service in Israel says, you got to tear down the orchard. Well, so there's quite a bit of relationship between the Palestinians and the Israelis. It goes up to the Israeli Supreme Court. I won't tell you what happens. Some of the characters in that film fare a lot better than others. And quite frankly, some of the Israelis don't fare very well in that particular film, except for the wife of the defense minister. She's a real wonderful lady.
So you have a sister who's obviously deeply involved in film. Have you always been interested in film yourself?
Not as much as my sister. She's coming in for the second time to help work the film festival. She now lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, has for like 4 years, and she probably sees 6 or 7 films a week.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's pretty serious.
Yeah, when she was in L.A., she saw more than that.
Yeah. So what are your goals as beyond, obviously, populating the festival with worthy films and a variety of films? Are you trying to populate certain columns, like let's make sure we have, human interest story that involves war? Are there categories, or is it more a broad slate where you just want to find the best films?
We want to find the best films. Without going into specifics, last year we geared 3 films to what we thought were specific audiences, and it didn't really work out that way. So the idea was this year we were just going to pick what we thought were great universal films touching a different a group of subjects, and hope that we would be able to educate not only our Jewish folk, but the non-Jewish population of greater Indianapolis as well. We have such great history in filmmaking among Jews that we want to share it.
And in entertainment,
that's correct.
Yeah. In fact, in particular, the history of Los Angeles is a lot about the Jewish population that moved there.
Well, and if you think about it, most of the early filmmaking was controlled by members were controlled by Jews. Jack Warner, 21st Century, goes on and on and on. And some of the great directors and producers were Jewish.
You have some local talent who have been involved in these films.
Yeah,
you have a young lady who graduated from, was it Broad Ripple?
Yes, Galen Ross she's in Israel right now. I don't know whether she voted yesterday, but she's flying back to Indianapolis. Indianapolis on March the 23rd, and will be here to show her documentary film, which I think will be well received. We have 2 documentaries at least. The other one is Nancy Spielberg's film about the formation of the Israeli Air Force. Nancy is the sister of Steven Spielberg, and she's flying in from New York to present her film, which will be shown at the Indiana History Center.
That's Above and Beyond.
Above and Beyond,
yeah,
correct. And actually, it's quite interesting. I didn't know this until I saw the film, that many of the pilots and people that worked on the Israeli Air Force were American volunteers. that served in the U.S. Air Force.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Yeah.
An untold story, or
yes,
untold until now.
Right.
And then I guess we could call him a Hoosier by adoption, Robbie Benson, who teaches at IU now.
He
and
does.
Is associated with one of, I believe there have been three or four film adaptations of The Chosen.
Right, right. That's the Chaim Potok story. Robbie Benson played one of the lead characters in the original film. So that's another one of the older films we're showing. Without promising, I'm trying to get Robbie to come up for it. He has not been well. That's part of the problem.
Oh.
So I got my fingers crossed that maybe I can have someone from Bloomington that I know drive him up and then back.
And Indianapolis has restorative powers.
Yes. Sure.
I have to ask you, I read that the original novel from which those multiple films have been made when I was a teenager. Does the film hold up? It struck me as a beautiful coming-of-age story. Does it hold up, and did the film strike you as still being relevant?
I thought it held up, and I thought it is relevant today, yes.
Yeah. Do you want to say a little bit more about, because I realize if you haven't read it, you don't know what we're talking about. Tell us about the two main characters in it.
The two main characters, one is Orthodox and one comes from a liberal family. And it's basically the clashing of the families and how that resolves. So it's a film that is really Jewish oriented. I mean, there's not much about the film that doesn't involve Jewish values and the clash that we even see today. As an example, in Israel with this election, you have the religious right, which is probably going to support Netanyahu, and then you have the more liberal folk that supported Isaac Herzog. And this is, you know, they always say among Jews, if you've got two Jews, you've got three opinions. And that was true of The Chosen as well.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're listening and saying, well, I don't know if I relate to that, it struck me as exemplifying the challenges of creating a friendship across any cultural borders or barriers.
You're absolutely correct. It has universal themes, just like Fiddler on the Roof, as an example. It's strictly a Jewish story, but, I mean, my God, that's been translated into 50 different languages, shown all around the world. It is one of the most popular musicals ever created.
Tell us about using multiple venues. What's your goal there?
We want to subject our viewership to the wonderful venues that we have in Indianapolis. I mean, last year we had four films shown at Landmark with great success. I mean, they have very good facilities. We had one shown at CTS. We're going back to CTS. That was very successful. Our gala last year was at the public library. We're going back to the public library. The big change is that we're showing films at Haston Hebrew Academy. We had one film last year at University High School, which has been a major supporter of the film festival. The problem there is they don't have soft seating. They have folding chairs, whereas the Haston Academy has a wonderful auditorium that seats about 300 with soft seating. So we're having several films shown there. It's also reaching out to the Orthodox community, which felt left out last time, and we wanted to include everyone. So we expect a fairly good turnout from them this time as well.
Terrific. And also the Haston Hebrew Academy is a beautiful building that people who aren't Jewish might not have had a reason to go into.
That is true. Yeah. That is true.
Sharon Gamble with Bob Epstein, impresario of the second annual Jewish Film Festival. The festival takes place at several venues around Indianapolis and includes all kinds of fare. You can watch or participate in a Jewish wedding, hear documentary filmmaker Nancy Spielberg talk about her film Above and Beyond, and much, much more. You can plan your schedule at IndianapolisJewishFilmFestival.com. Again, IndianapolisJewishFilmFestival.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Candlelight Theater is bringing three chaotic comedies to the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site. The show, called Goodnight Caroline, features three vintage one-acts, each performed in a different room of the mansion. Travis DiNicola spoke with actress Donna Wing and playwright Jim Trofeter about the show.
Donna, Jim, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both here.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Travis.
You for
We're happy
us.
To be here.
You're very welcome. And this is going to be a fun, fun evening. The Candlelight Theater is bringing to the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site, Goodnight Caroline, three one-act vintage chaotic comedies. Before we actually jump into the this specific evening, you guys have been doing this for a while, 10 years now at the Harrison
yes,
Home?
Yes, actually, since 2004. This is our 12th season.
Excellent.
And we have so many of the actors have been with us from the beginning. We're a troupe,
mm-hmm.
and we work specifically at the presidential site. Our troupe is Candlelight Theater, and we've had great loyalty. We're all volunteer actors,
mm-hmm.
and this is, like I said, going into our 12th year.
And Candlelight is exclusive to the Harrison Center?
Oh, you bet.
Okay. I wasn't quite sure about that.
It's
I wasn't sure if you guys
to anything
did.
Like this in the country. We are the only theater company that performs in a U.S. president's home. And there are other...
That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. We actually perform among the artifacts of the home. 75% to 80% of our set was used by the 23rd president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what makes this so interesting and exciting is that when the performances are given, not only is it in the home, but it's not just like set up as a traditional theater, but you're actually in the different rooms in the house and utilizing your set pieces are furniture and props and things from the home, right?
And
to some to a great extent?
Very much. As a matter of fact, I'm performing in the master bedroom and I actually perform in the bed in which President Harrison...
that sounds a little odd, but okay.
an actress, how cool that is.
That is very
I'm
cool.
I'm actually there. And the audience is actually... Of course, no one can see us right now, but you are approximately 5 feet from me. Well, mm-hmm. the audience will be much closer to me than you are right now.
It's got to be a limited audience for each performance, right?
Yes.
Because it's a small number of people who can fit into each room.
And if I may explain the concept, because this is very confusing, because... People say you're doing theater in the U.S. President's Home. They think that we have a welcome center or a big room. But this is, and if I can explain this from the standpoint of if you were a guest in second person coming into the site, what your experience would be like.
Mm-hmm.
So you would arrive between 7:30 and 8. Curtain is at 8 o'clock during the evenings. And you would be seated in one of three rooms. And let's say you are seated in the back parlor to start.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you and 19 other people are seated in that room.
Okay, so 20 people, limited audience. Okay.
In one room. Now, there are two other rooms also.
And they're rotating through on the same
through.
Night. Right, right. And so it's the different plays are going on simultaneously
yes,
throughout the house and people rotate. Okay.
The actors will do each play three times.
Mm-hmm.
So you would see one play in the back parlor. In a moment, Jim will explain what play that will be.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about 25 minutes, you will rotate to the dining room. You would see another play. Then you would have approximately a 20-25 minute intermission,
mm-hmm.
and then go to the master bedroom for the third play. Or you might rotate in a different order,
sure.
depending where you start. But so for 2 hours, you are in the site, in the home, seeing three plays and having a lovely intermission. There's candlelight, ambient lighting, the artifacts, actors very close to you. And fun play.
It's a great concept.
Wonderful concept.
It's very, very, very fun. And this year, it's going to be even more fun because the plays are so farcical. I was reading some descriptions of them, and they all sound like a hoot. Jim, you're the playwright of one of the plays.
Yes, Night Nurse Madeline.
Night Nurse Madeline. And the night nurse is a little bit, from what I read... not quite listening to her patient.
Possibly driving her patient quite mad, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's the patient actually is a man who's going through the loss of a loved one, and it's the loss of the loved one that's the real catch for the play, so I won't give that away right now.
Mm-hmm.
But she unfortunately brings up lots of memories of the loved one and causes him to just lose his mind.
This is a play that you wrote specifically for this space?
Yes.
Is it based on anything? I mean, the descriptions sound as if, I mean, they're kind of like turn-of-the-century type of goofy plays anyway.
Well, what we do, Travis, mm-hmm. is, and this is really a Herculean task, every year we find three 25-minute plays, or try to find, I should say, three 25-minute plays that can be performed at the site with a small cast in the vintage setting. Mm-hmm. And also, the three plays tie in with each other. So the three plays this year all have something to do with night.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And last year, year before last, they all had something to do with somebody trapped in a situation. There were mysteries, and we called it Trapped. So these plays sure. have to work together. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very hard to find three plays that we can perform there and that we can find the copyright holder. And we had found three plays, and one of them we cannot get the copyright,
mm-hmm.
The rights to do it, I should say. And so that's where our resident playwright comes in, because Jim helps us in these binds so he can complement plays already written. He
okay.
can adapt works, mm-hmm. as long as they're in the public domain, to plays for the site.
And in that mm-hmm. case, or in this case, that's what you've done?
In this case, the play had an inordinate amount of money for royalties.
Okay.
And so what we did was, since we had already had the advertising and everything go out for that type of play, we just... Mm-hmm. We designed something that was similar to that play.
Okay.
And follow that same format.
How fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so this is a premiere. is this something that, I mean, as you're working on it too, you're working with the actors, are developing the play with them, or was it pretty much set when you went into rehearsals? No. Or?
I have, because we know who's going to be acting in each of the plays, I tend to write mm-hmm. for the people who I know are going to be able to do it.
Sure. Okay.
And so since we do have a cast that comes back year after year, I pretty know pretty people's talents.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what they can do and how much they can memorize.
Nice.
So I try to gear it toward that.
So the one play, the nurse that is driving her patient crazy, the title play, Good Night, Caroline. And Donna, you're Caroline, right?
I am Caroline.
And you are just not letting your husband go to sleep.
Oh, that's right. I have something on my mind that I need, and it's 2:00 in the morning. And then a burglar comes in,
mm-hmm.
and Caroline is very manipulative, and she's going to rehabilitate this burglar and get even with her husband at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And then the third play?
The third play?
Is Suppressed Desires. Mm-hmm. It's a woman who has become obsessed with psychoanalysis in 1915,
mm-hmm.
and everything her husband does has to be psychoanalyzed, and everything that her younger sister does has to be psychoanalyzed. And it's showing how her obsession with it actually becomes her downfall.
Okay. So now, you said 1915 on that. Are all the plays historical in that the costumes and sort of the feel of them, as if they were, you know, maybe not back in the time of President Harrison, but close to it, taking advantage of the house in that way?
What we attempt to do is to find plays that are older. Now, older is, we have a time frame from about the mid-1800s to mm-hmm. about 1950.
And so the settings are within that period.
So we have actually performed a few contemporary plays that could be performed in that setting, because maybe the protagonist was an older woman who lived in her family's home,
mm-hmm.
Or we set a play in the 1950s and the mansion is appropriate. So the plays don't necessarily have to be contemporaneous with the time of the president.
Sure.
But the furnishings mm-hmm. have to be consistent with it.
And to work within mm-hmm. that setting. Yeah. Which is great. So you already have really a built-in set piece.
We don't have to build sets.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about Oh, and that's another thing I failed to mention, our
mm-hmm.
lighting.
Mm-hmm.
We're candlelight theater, which mm-hmm. means
it really is candlelight.
Mm-hmm. Not every play. It's specific to which plays require candlelight.
Sure.
But at least one of the plays will be candlelit. We have ambient lighting,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very intimate and unique setting that you will not find any place else.
It sounds like you're just having a lot of fun. I mean, I can tell both of you really enjoy being a part of this.
We would not have volunteered for 14 years to do this, mm-hmm. nor would about 20 other people. We have a troupe of about 20, even though not all are performing at the same time.
Yeah.
But if this were not fun.
Mm-hmm. What have the audience reactions in the past been?
One thing that we hear a lot is, if I only knew, you're a best-kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
Who else knows about this? And that's one of the kind of paradoxes we have, because we want people to know about us, but we can only seat 60 people an evening, and we have 7 performances. And sellouts are very common. So the uniqueness is one of the things we hear. Another thing we hear many times, especially in the fall, because Jim also writes her fall production, which in October it's done differently, and it's our Halloween event, is that we're mixing U.S. history, combining history with some type of ghostly tale in the fall.
Sure.
And parents love that. They say, oh, my child thought he or she was coming out to be scared or haunted, and they're learning U.S. history.
Right.
So there's also a great educational aspect, too.
And the people, I mean, imagine having, you know, if you had a big enough living room, this is doing theater in your living room.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's salon theater, which was done a lot in the late 1800s, but just disappeared. And so it's a different environment for the audience, which is so neat to have someone so close to you. Typically,
so intimate,
you know, you have the lights and the actors can't see the audience and the audience is so far away. You're right on top of them and they just love that. I mean, we can hear everything. Oh, that person's, he just did that. I can't believe that. You know, the audience is playing along and they're really into the plays, but they're so close. They can see every detail. You can't. They don't miss anything, okay? And that's what's so wonderful about that. And for actors,
it's a great challenge.
Oh, my God, because it's so hard to be and have someone sitting this close to you and not make eye contact.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard. We have some people who can't do it.
You can't hide behind the lights. I perform also, as Jim does, on a larger stage, and this is more challenging for me.
I'm sure.
Because I can't, the moment you make eye contact with someone in the audience, no, and I will stress, this is not interactive theater.
Right.
So there is the fourth wall there, that invisible wall. And if you break that, then suddenly the magic's gone. So we are very challenged continually. And like Jim said, there's some very experienced actors who have joined us. And after a performance or two, they say, you know, this just is not for us.
Sure. It's a very tough situation. Let me ask you this. One question I do have is that the President Benjamin, the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site is a historic site, and the house is a museum. And, for example, Donna, you mentioned that you know, you're actually in the bed when you're taking place in this and doing Goodnight Caroline. Has there ever been anything that's come up where the curators have said, oh, no, you can't use that prop or that piece of furniture or that room or something like that?
I have a great story to tell.
Sure.
The very first performance, 2004, I was in a Feydeau play called Wooed and Viewed, and we had to use plates and table settings because it takes place over a lunch. And I approached the curator, Jennifer Capps, and I said, Jennifer, I need to use some china for this play. We need to use some dishes. And there was this long pause, and she said, well, Donna, I just can't let you have the Harrison china for this. But I have some 1910 Wedgwood. Would that work? And I said, well, you know, considering we usually shop at Goodwill. So we do have to make substitutions and adjustments, but everything we have there is an antique.
Yeah.
So even if we have to remove a Harrison chair because we cannot sit on it, we have a needlepoint chair from 1920 that we use. So it's really not a major issue at all.
Yeah, but obviously you do work with the curator very closely.
Oh, very closely.
Yeah, they have a bunch of substitute furniture that people can sit on and work with. But that's about all we do. We can't really touch anything else in the room. It looks like we're working in the room, but we really can't touch anything else.
That's
one of the difficulties for the cast. It's like they like to put things down on tables. You can't. That's an antique.
Well, it sounds like it's just going to be a great evening. Donna, Jim, thank you so much for coming in to Are the Matter. It's going to be a lot of fun for Goodnight Caroline.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with actress Donna Wing and playwright Jim Trofeter of Candlelight Theater. Goodnight Caroline, 3 one-act comedies, takes place at the President Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site from April 17th through May 2nd. More information is available at presidentbenjaminharrison.org. Again, presidentbenjaminharrison.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Why do you have three calculators over there?
Three?
Are you finishing your taxes?
They'll be done soon, I hope.
I'm so impressed.
Thanks.
Well, when you finish your taxes, we have some ideas of things you can do to go out and celebrate getting that task done on our calendar we call
What do we do? That's a great idea. I wish I could just make those taxes disappear. And you know what?
Is there magic?
There is. So that's a good way to celebrate getting your taxes done.
Yeah.
The War Wizard. This is a show being put on by Taylor Martin's Indie Magic Monthly. It's part of their 7th anniversary. anniversary. They're bringing in the Emmy Award-winning actor-magician Max Howard this weekend, and he's going to be performing a show on Saturday at Theater on the Square, both at 2 and 6 p.m. He's going to be performing as Professor Gus Rich, a Civil War soldier. And so the show is called The War Wizard. And then he will also, Max Howard that is, will also be doing a series of lectures for magicians and actors both on Saturday evening on effective presentations and then a four-hour workshop on Sunday creating theatrical magic, again, both for actors and magicians at Theater on the Square with Max Howard. So if you can't make your taxes disappear, you can at least learn how to make your neighbor disappear.
What a great opportunity. Your buddy rabbit. The stagecraft of magic. I love that. Yeah. Very cool. Well, it may seem like there's some magic involved. You'll just have to see this production to find out about it. 18-year-old Dontrell Jones III decides that it's his duty and destiny to venture into the Atlantic Ocean in search of an ancestor lost during the Middle Passage. But his family's not at all ready to abandon its prized son to the waters of a mysterious and haunting past.
Mm.
The play is called Dontrell, Who Kissed the Sea, and it is it's a present-day hero's quest. Think of the Campbell story of the archetypal hero, and you've got a little bit of an idea of what's going on here. And you get to explore the lengths and depths to which we must go to redeem history's wrongs. A brand new play on stage at the Phoenix Theater opening this weekend. It's called Dontrell, Who Kissed the Sea.
Very cool. Hey, I think this is a great idea for Mother's Day. You can already start planning now. The IRT is doing a special Mother's Day celebration with their production of On Golden Pond. Of course, you know the movie, The Loons. And the play is just as wonderful. But what they're doing for Mother's Day is they're having a special brunch performance. And they have an omelet bar and honey brown sugar ham and French toasted casserole and skillet potatoes and danishes and bagels and muffins and juice and coffee and more. And it's all part of a brunch. The brunch is at noon, and then the show is at 2. What a great thing to do with your mom on Mother's Day. You can get more information at irtlive.com. On Golden Pond is opening very soon there, but this would be a great way to celebrate Mother's Day.
Absolutely. Hey, if your mother likes dance, I'm going to piggyback on your Mother's Day thought here.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you about this now because these tickets are going to go fast. You know, the new film version of Cinderella, directed by, of all people, Kenneth Branagh, is getting great reviews for its charm and its kind of simple sticking to the tale of Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Central Indiana Dance Ensemble is going to do its own real-life version of Cinderella, the full-length storybook ballet, on Saturday, May 16th at 2 and 7:30. It'll be at the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater, so not that many seats, only those two performances, Saturday, May 16th, a bit after Mother's Day, but you can present the tickets to Mom on Mother's Day and say, hey, let's go see Cinderella next week.
Nice. Well, if you can't wait that long for some ballet, then maybe you should head up to Clues for Butler Ballet's The Sleeping Beauty, which is coming up on Friday, April 17th. It also runs that whole weekend through the 18th and 19th at different times. You can get more information at, of course, clueshall.org, but it's the classic Sleeping Beauty with the Bluebird and Puss in Boots and the White Cat and Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf and so much more. It should be a lot of fun with Butler Ballet.
Watch out for all those outlaws and outliers on Butler's campus as part of the Butler Arts Fest as well. Hey,
I guess the wolf is the outlaw.
The wolf is the outlaw or the outlier, one of them. Hey, speaking of Clues Hall, Clues Hall is going to screen a film called Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me. And here's the story. In 2011, country legend Glen Campbell was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Rather than hide his struggle, he and his wife went public with the diagnosis and did what was intended to be a short goodbye tour, but that was a three-week engagement that turned into an emotional and triumphant 151-show nationwide journey, which was chronicled in an award-winning documentary film called Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me. It's going to be presented in Indianapolis during a one-night-only event at Clues Hall on Friday, April 24th, and you can visit Clues Hall, CLOWES Hall.org, to find out more. Again, that's Friday, April 24th, Clues Hall, Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me.
Very cool. Hey, this weekend there is a pop-up gallery that is taking place right next to Binkley's up in Broad Ripple on College Avenue, and it is called The Collective, and it is open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 5 both days. Thursday and Friday nights till 9, and featuring a whole bunch of great local artists. Some of our favorites, Loban Hamilton, as well as Philip Campbell, Constance Skopelidis, and a whole bunch of other great artists are going to be showing there as part of this pop-up gallery, Wet Paint, Heavy Metals, and Broken Records on College Avenue next to Binkley's, IndieCollective.com.
I love that name. Very cool. Hey, when Kyle Eastwood was growing up in Carmel, California, doing his homework, he remembers his dad playing recordings of jazz stars like Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Miles Davis. And Clint Eastwood had been attending the Monterey Jazz Festival since its beginning in 1958 and started taking his kids when they were born. Long story short, Kyle Eastwood turned into a jazz performer himself, and he is playing on Wednesday, April 15th, tax day. Get your taxes done so you can go to see either
That's right.
7 or 9:30 show at the Jazz Kitchen. Kyle Eastwood at the Jazz Kitchen, 7 and 9:30 on Wednesday, April 15th. Tickets just $25. Pretty good deal.
Very cool. Hey, Madam Walker is having a really cool event coming up on April 18th. They're having an evening where they're honoring the achievements of four philanthropists and entrepreneurs, including Gary Brackett and Crystal DeHaan, Sparkle Myers, and Deborah Oates. And there is a cocktail reception and awards. And then afterwards, a concert with Macy Gray, who is just a great performer. So that's pretty cool. So a big award ceremony plus Macy Gray. Get more information at the Madam Walker.
Hey, if you are a writer, listen up. Butler University's Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing program is offering two courses this summer open to the general public. The first one is Intensive Screenwriting, Make a Movie in 3 Weeks. Yikes! It's going to be Monday through Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m., May 18th through June 5th. So very intense but short commitment there. The second workshop is Writing Poems That Don't Fit, an intensive workshop that will meet Monday through Friday from 6 p.m. to 9:40 p.m. August 3rd through the 14th. Both classes meet in the Ephraimson Center for Creative Writing on campus, and you can get more information by emailing Mindy Dunn at mdunn, the numeral 1, at butler.edu, or I'll bet you can go to butler.edu/Google that.
Very cool. Hey, if you're a jazz fan and looking for a road trip this weekend, go up to Valpo, Valparaiso University, because Natalie Cole is headlining their Jazz Fest and performing on Saturday night at 8:30 in the Athletics Recreation Center at Valparaiso University as part of their Jazz Fest. That will be a great, great concert.
And unforgettable.
Aww.
Oh, sorry. And for a completely different kind of music, a little bit bluegrass, a little bit folk, and a whole lot original, that's Harpeth Rising, which is appearing as part of the Indie Folk Series on Saturday, April 18th. It's a trio of classically trained young musicians, but bringing an exciting and distinctive sound to the kind of folk tradition, a new spin on folk music. You can learn more at Harpeth, spelled like Harp, E-T-H, rising.com, or you can also go to indiefolkseries.org and learn more about that concert.
Very good. Well, Sharon, you can also learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, or listen to us next weekend on
What'll We Do? Finish your taxes.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Director Maria Matters knew she wanted to work on a somewhat experimental musical this spring at Footlight, but it wasn't until a chance encounter that she realized the Who's Tommy was calling out to her. Sharon Gamble invited Maria in to hear about the production.
So it's hard to imagine somebody might not know the plot of Tommy and what happens to the title character, but can you kind of take us through what the story of Tommy is?
Sure. Tommy's father is reported missing in World War II, and he's presumed to be dead. Tommy's mother raises young Tommy, and she goes on with her life, and she finds a new love. Tommy's father then is liberated from a prisoner of war camp and comes home to find his wife in the arms of another man.
Uh-oh.
A fight ensues, and Tommy's father kills the boyfriend. Unfortunately, four-year-old Tommy witnesses all this by looking in a mirror at a piece of furniture that's in the living room. And then he's further traumatized by his mother and what is his father, although he doesn't know his father. They tell him, you didn't see it, you didn't hear it, you won't say nothing to no one, never in your life. And this basically traumatizes him, and he becomes somewhat catatonic. His parents are somewhat distanced from Tommy because, well, father's never really gotten to know him, and mother feels a lot of guilt over causing Tommy's issues with non-responsiveness. And they are somewhat careless in who they leave him with. Mm. They leave him with an uncle who molests him. They leave him with a cousin who bullies him. And they take him to doctors along the way, trying to fix him to no avail. Eventually, the stress of all this causes the breakup of their marriage. And Tommy's mother, in a fit of frustration, breaks the mirror that Tommy stares at. And this breaks through to him, and he recovers his senses. But along the way, he's been discovered to be a bit of a pinball savant and become a local celebrity. But this miracle cure thrusts him even higher into the celebrity limelight, and he becomes more of a celebrity. And this celebrity it kind of perplexes him. He doesn't really know how to deal with it. And then he tries to distance himself by performing his pinball on a stage to kind of get him away from the people.
Mm-hmm.
But during one of his performances, a young girl gets injured, and this disturbs Tommy. He realizes this whole celebrity thing has spiraled out of control. And he goes home to try to figure out where he goes from there. And he takes the young girl with him. He also takes all of the concert people with him. They basically are looking for a savior to the easy way to heaven and to enlightenment or whatever. And then he tells them that the point is not for him to, or for them to be like him. The point is for that he is finally like them, and that they already have all the miracles that he's never had. Well, he hasn't had for the last 15 years. And they turn on him because they want an easy answer.
Sure.
In the end, though, he reconciles with both his fans and his family. And so we have the quintessential happy ending.
But along the way, a very dark story. What draws you to this story?
A couple years ago, I was casting about after I'd done a show, and I try to do a show every 2 years.
As a director?
Yes, as a director. And I was casting about for what I was going to do next. And I was looking at things that are from my era. I'm 55, so that gives you the era. And I was looking at Hair. And I heard that a very well-known director was going to do a production of Hair. So I decided that would not be a good idea to follow up very closely with that. So I was looking about for something to do, and I went into this little bar and grill on the east side called the Tie-Dye Grill. They specialize in, or their theme is 50s, 60s, and 70s rock and roll music. Mm-hmm. And they play the music of the era. And I was having lunch with my son, and I heard the iconic chords of Pinball Wizard. And I looked at my son, and I said, that's it. That's the show I need to do.
Wow.
It has to be Tommy. That also was my first movie date with a boyfriend ever. We went to the Eastwood and saw it.
Oh, cool.
So it has a little bit of a special connection for me. So that's how I decided to do Tommy.
I'm casting about my memory. I feel like has there been a production of Tommy? If so, not
here
recently.
Locally?
Yeah.
Yes. I believe Civic did a young artist's production many, many years ago. But I don't think it's been done since.
How does the, I know that the the double album, the stage play, the film all have a little bit of they're not all the same. There's some differences among those.
They are not.
How does the musical script handle the age progression? Do you cast a young actor to be Tommy as a little boy, then 10, and then a young adult? Or what do you do about that?
We actually have three Tommies.
Uh-huh.
We call them the bigs and the littles. we have a 5-year-old Tommy, Braden Summers. We have a 10-year-old Tommy, Zach Clare, and we have the adult Tommy, or the big Tommy, which is Jonathan Krause.
Who's about 19 or 20, something
18,
like that? Yeah, right on the cusp of adulthood.
He progresses to about 20, 18, 19, 20 during his scenes.
And then there are a lot of settings, you know, the uncle, the various doctors and the quack. Well, I shouldn't call them that, but the various people that the parents take Tommy to try to cure him. How do you handle all these different settings on your set?
Well, originally it was done with projection. I decided not to do it with projection simply because that's what everybody does. But we are doing it very suggested.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a lot of realistic sets. The only one that even approaches a realistic set is the apartment where the Walkers live. But everything else is pretty much fantasy-like and suggested. The hospitals are represented by a series of doorways.
Hmm.
Let me see, what else? Because we don't do a lot of set except for the house itself.
Sure.
The concept for the overall design is that when you walk in, you're basically, the stage is a giant pinball machine. So as you look at it, it's going to look like you're looking at the inside of a pinball machine.
Whoa.
And the band is actually up where the scoreboard of the pinball machine would be.
How fun. Whose concept was that?
It was a combined concept between myself, my set designer, Ed Trout, and my son, Eric Matters.
Hmm. Very fun. So how do you deal with, are the parents at all sympathetic? How do you deal with that? Because it could be, the whole story of the play could just come across as borderline child abuse to this poor kid.
Yeah. And that's been one of the difficult parts is working with the actors on that to get a certain amount of warmth. Like I said, Dad is a bit disconnected. He basically meets this kid at 5 years old, and he's catatonic. Mom, of course, is Mom. But Mom feels a little bit like she's been deprived of the joy of raising her son.
Sure.
But she realizes that it's also partly her own fault, so there's a lot of guilt there.
Yeah.
But Mom remains steadfastly by him, although I think she allows herself to be convinced or swayed against her better judgment. But in the end, she does the right thing.
And then there's the story arc of Tommy himself. How do you deal with a character who, at least on the surface, can't see, hear, or speak?
Well, the way the stage production is done, the big Tommy acts as the audience's guide. He's sort of a ghost figure, so he moves in and out, and nobody on stage sees him. So he kind of expresses what the younger Tommies cannot, as it were. And I got to say, my Tommies are just fabulous at acting catatonic, which is difficult.
Yeah, because you can't respond to anybody around you on stage.
Exactly.
You can't respond to the music.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, they just have to zone out.
How do you motivate them to do that? What do you tell them, especially the littles?
For Zachary, we just told him, you know how you kind of ignore your mom sometimes?
Except the 5-year-old. Yep.
No, Zachary is the 10-year-old.
The 10-year-old, okay.
and you kind of zone out, and he just said, okay, got it. And that was the end of it.
I hope Mom isn't listening to this.
Yeah, she was the one who came up with it.
And your band for this is probably a little different than a typical Footlight band.
It's about eight pieces. It relies very heavily on synthesized. There's three keyboards, so it's a lot of synthesized sound.
Fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. I want a rock concert feel. I want the audience at the end to think that they should be raising lighters, although I don't want them to.
Raise your cell phone with the flashlight
there
app
you
on
go.
It, right?
That's it.
What's your favorite? Do you have a couple of favorite moments?
Pinball Wizard, when I saw them do the in rehearsals to do Pinball Wizard, that number is just wonderful. And then I think the second one is near the end when it is Big Tommy and 10-year-old Tommy comes back in to Big Tommy is somewhat downtrodden and dismayed that he's been rejected by all of his fans, and he doesn't really know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And little Tommy comes in and kind of lifts him up, both figuratively and spiritually. And the moment that the two of them share, as Big Tommy sees what he has to do now, is just wonderful. It's just a beautiful piece of theater.
Sharon Gamble with Maria Matters, director of Footlight's production of The Who's Tommy. You can see, hear, and feel it May 1st through the 17th. Go to footlight.org for details. That's Footlight, FOOTLITE.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get to polish up the silver exhibit at the IMA.
I'll get a preview of next year's Broadway in Indianapolis touring company season.
And I'll take a peek at the upcoming annual Stutz Artist Open House, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.